table, the first item on the agenda is opening and welcome. Under opening, shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for the prayer and the meditation. To welcome members of the portfolio committee, officials of the media, members of the public, and other distinguished guests. We are meeting here today as we start our budget review recommendation report process for 2015. We have invited AXA to brief us about the audit findings of the Department of Higher Education and Training and its entities' financial and non-financial performance for the period 2014-2015 financial year. This meeting will assist members in preparation for the meetings with the department and its entities, particularly on their audit outcomes. So I'm looking forward to a constructive engagement. And with these few words, I would like to thank you. Please feel free, this is our meeting. We'll then move on to item number 2, which is apologies, and ask the secretary to read apologies.
Thank you, Chair. We received an apology from the Honorable Killian, which is a bereavement. We also received an apology from Mr. Kasim, who went to hospital. And we also received an apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister who are attending a Cabinet Committee meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We take note of the apologies. We then move on to item number 3, which is introduction. Starting from myself, I am Singi Yvonne Mukwenkwezi-Posa, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. And then over to you, Chris.
Belinda Bazzoli, committee member.
Thank you, Professor. Next.
Sue Elvis, member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable member. Next.
Sibongile Mchunu, a member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable member Mchunu. Next.
Kwekwema Umapiro, member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable member.
Honorable Mbata, a member of the committee.
Honorable member, thank you very much. We will then move on to. Yes. All the department is okay. Okay, let's move over to the department.
Amelia Pullman, the IGT.
Thank you very much.
Wes Konde from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Mr. Konde.
Okay, we'll talk from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Thank you, sir.
Feroz Patel, Department of Higher Education and Training.
Thank you,
sir. Nomonde Hakmeni, DHET.
Thank you very much. We will then move over to AXA. Thank you very much.
Michelle Panay, AGFA.
Thank you.
Mongla Manzis, AGFA.
Thank you.
Haklo Nell, AGFA.
Thank you. And Simon, AGFA. Thank you.
Christian George, AGFA.
Okay. Thank you.
Sazin Luando, Auditor General South Africa, based here in the Western Cape.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Lila Leroux, also from the Auditor General's office.
Thank you very much. I'm tempted to ask also the officials that are accompanying the committee to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Sampao Mudiba, the committee content advisor.
Thank you.
Anele Kabingis, I'm the committee secretary.
Thank you.
In terms of the comments, Howard, I represent the committee.
Eliza Mohodola, Committee Communications Group.
Okay, thank you very much. We now know who is in this meeting. Is there anyone that we left out? Okay, have we all introduced ourselves? I don't remember that corner. Did you introduce yourself, ma'am?
No.
Okay.
I'm Leah Thacker. I'm with PMG.
All right, please feel at home. This is our meeting, and I'm looking forward to a fruitful deliberation with yourself. Thank you very much. We will then move over to item number 4, which is briefing by the Auditor General South Africa on the audit outcomes of the Department of Higher Education and Training and its entities for the 2014-15 financial year. Over to you. You will tell us who leads the discussion. Who is the lead of the delegation? Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for affording us this opportunity to present to you the audit outcomes for the 14-15 financial year for the department as well as its entities. I will leave the presentation assisted by my colleague Simbunile, who will take you through the outcomes on the TVET colleges that you were responsible for as the auditors. Our reputation, promise, and mission as the Auditor General of South Africa, we have a constitutional mandate, and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And that's the main reason why we're here today. We're hoping that during our audit process, we gain insights in terms of which we can share with you as portfolio committee to assist you in exercising your oversight responsibilities. Just to take you briefly through the agenda for the presentation today, the purpose of the presentation, the scope of our audit as the AGSA, the overall outcomes for the department and its entities, highlighting unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, root causes and recommendations that talk directly to the outcomes, the outcomes for the TVET colleges that are audited by the AGSA, combined assurance, and the minister's commitment in terms of driving clean audit outcomes and improved internal control. The purpose of the presentation, as we've already alluded to, is just to share with the committee the outcomes of the 14-15 audit that we concluded during July for the department as well as its entities, as well as the TVET colleges that we are responsible for as the auditors. The scope of the AGSA audit, this is just a refreshment for the purposes of the committee members in terms of what the AGSA audit entails. The first area that we focus on is our financial statements. So we actually look at whether our financial statements are free from any misstatements that will affect the state presentation of those financial statements. The second area that we look at is the audit on predetermined objectives. This focuses on the annual performance report. And we look at whether your annual performance plan complies with the SMART criteria in terms of the usefulness, and also in terms of the actual achievements that are reported in your annual performance report, we look at the reliability of the actual achievements that are reported in the annual report. Compliance with legislation, we review key legislation in terms of that has an impact on the financial and performance management of the department and entity, and we report any significant findings on non-compliance in the audit report. The other area in terms of what we report on in our audit report is our key internal control deficiencies. the key internal control deficiencies are those areas that we say that the department and the entities need to focus on to address the three areas, whether they were findings on the financial statements, the annual performance report, or compliance with legislation, in order to drive the clean audit outcome. What don't we provide assurance on? We do not provide assurance on the appropriateness of the departmental budget. We do not provide assurance on service delivery. With regards to legislation, we do not look at all legislation. Like I mentioned, it's only those that have an impact on financial and performance management. And we also assess the risk of fraud, but we're not responsible for fraud identification or prevention. Those are management controls that should be in place. If we can move to the overall outcome, specifically for the higher education and training portfolio, so this would be the department and the 26 entities that fall within the scope of the Department of Higher Education and Training. The first graphic on your left-hand side, the overall improvement in the audit outcome. We're just showing you here a three-year picture in terms of the overall movement over the past 3 years, and you will notice a slight improvement in the overall outcome. The yellow part of the graphics is our qualified audited teammates that we had in the previous year. You will note that that has actually decreased over the past 3 years. For the 14-15, we have two qualifications who are WNR CETA and QCETA. The green portion of the graphic are those improvements where we noted that there's actually been an increase in the number of team audits. So that's actually increased from the previous year of 5 to the current year of 9. And the 9 entities that lie within that category of clean audit outcomes are Bank CETA, CHITA, ETDP, FACET, HW CETA, MICT, Services, CHE, and QCTO. So the remaining of the portfolio that I haven't mentioned will lie in the yellow area, which is unqualified with findings. And this is actually the area where we find that the portfolio is generally stagnant on, and we haven't really seen a move in this area. And one of the main reasons for this is our repeat findings on the financial statements, on our annual performance reports, as well as compliance. And the main reason for that would be that the internal control deficiencies as identified by the AGSA or internal audits are not being either adequately addressed or timely addressed. If we move over to the assurance levels, which is the graphic in the middle of the presentation, if I can refer you perhaps, if we can start with perhaps slide 14, to explain the assurance levels. The assurance levels, we have three different levels of assurance. The first level being the management assurance, which is your senior manager, your accounting authority, accounting officer, and the minister. We have the second level of assurance being the oversight assurance, being your coordinating or monitoring institutions, internal audit and audit committee. And then the third level of assurance is your independent assurance providers, are your oversight committees. When we look at assurance levels, specifically at the first level of assurance, being the management level of assurance, we actually link this directly to whether management has put in place controls to address the deficiencies that were identified by external audits or internal audits to improve audit outcomes. So this is directly linked to our key controls. If we look at the second level of assurance, our focus on internal audit and audit committee, we're looking at whether there's some assurance being provided by internal audit and audit committee as independent assurance providers as to whether management or the accounting officer authority has actually implemented the actions that they indicate that they will implement to address the internal control deficiencies. And the idea behind the assurance is that we look at a combined assurance approach where if we take the assurance provided by management, or the accounting officer authority, the executive authority, the second level of assurance, your internal audit and audit committee, as well as your third level of assurance, you should be able to get a picture in terms of what's going on at the department and the entity in achieving its mandate. Now, if I can take you back to the slide, on slide 6, the assurance level. You will note that for the management level of assurance, senior management, accounting officer, accounting authority, and executive authority, most of the assessments align with provide some assurance. And if we look at the graphic on the right-hand side called key controls, you will also note that most of the key controls in the areas of leadership, financial and performance management, which talks directly to the first level of assurance, is also yellow, which is at a concerning level. So that's our main concern if you look at the assurance level, because the key controls are actually there to assist management, the accounting officer, accounting authority, and minister to achieve the strategic objectives. And therefore, we're linking the assurance levels to the key controls as well, because that's one area that really needs to be focused on for the portfolio. Okay. With regards to the risk areas that are highlighted, the quality of financial statements, the quality of performance reports, our supply chain management, financial health, HR management, and IT. I will not go into detail here because the slides that follow talk to these specific slides, including the root causes for the outcomes that we see in front of us. Okay, if we move over to slide 7, the quality of the submitted financial statements. So here what we're trying to highlight is basically the number of financial statements that we receive that contain errors in them that were identified by us as auditors. And the audit process identified these errors and allowed management to correct. If we had not allowed those corrections to take place, we would not have been sitting with 2 qualifications, but we would have been sitting with 17 qualifications highlighted in the first graph. Of the 18 reports that we received that were unqualified with findings, only one of them did not have findings in relation to their financial statement, which was transport sector. The remaining 17 did have errors in them, and of the 17, only 2 did not or were not able to correct the financials, which were P sector and W&R sector. And hence the qualifications for those two speakers, because they were unable to make the corrections. So we look at, after the audit process was completed, we have 15 entities and the department, which is one, giving us the 16 that ended up with unqualified opinions on the financial statements. Some of the common areas, if you look at the financial statements that we identified where we found errors, the department, the main areas of errors were related to their disclosure notes in the financial statements. If we look at our CETAs, the main area of errors was identified specifically on their discretionary grant commitment contracting. NSF as well, it was related to their grants and related items on the financial statements to grants. NASDAQ is mainly related to their student loans. So if we look at the entities, CSERS, NSF, and NASDAQ, all 3 of them are actually related to their performance if you look at the areas that relate, that require adjustments in their financial statements. Just to take the committee back, on the quality of the financial statements, we do have a summary in the Word document that we have circulated. It's called the CC Briefing Note. The summary is on page 59 to 61, which will highlight to you the specific entities that had findings on their financial, on their annual performance report, as well as on compliance. So it gives you a snapshot picture as well. On slide 8, the quality of the annual performance report. We're saying that 16 of our reports are reliable and useful when compared to the prior year. We also had 16 in the prior year, so we're actually seeing no movement here. In terms of submission of the annual performance report on the 31st of May, all 27, the department and the 26 entities did submit on time. If we look at our findings on usefulness and reliability at the bottom of the slide, usefulness speaks to specifically our SMART criteria. We had 8 of our audits that did not comply with the SMART criteria and ended up with findings in their audit report as insignificant. 6 of them were we had 6 CETAs, being ADRI CETA, CHAT CETA, EW CETA, LG CETA, T CETA, and Transport CETA. And the other 2 entities were the NSF and NASA. Unreliability, you will note that we only ended up with 7 reports that had findings on the reliability of the actual achievements reported in the annual report. But the audit process, again, actually identified there were 19 initially in terms of the department being one and the remaining 18 being the entities where we identified errors in the annual performance report. After the audit processes were concluded and an opportunity was provided to correct those errors, we ended up with 7 remaining and the rest of them correcting their annual performance report. The 7 that we had findings on in the audit report were the department, construction CETA, CHAT CETA, LG CETA, the NSF, T CETA, and SAP. If we move to the 3rd area of reporting in the audit report, which is our compliance with laws and regulations, legislation, the first graphic speaks to the quality of the annual financial statement submitted on the 31st of May. 17 out of the 27 reports that we, financial statement quality that we received on the 31st of May actually contained a significant number of errors in there. That we as auditors identified and management had to correct, and we only then ended up with the 2 qualifications. So, like we highlighted previously, 15 of our report, financial statements of the portfolio were actually significantly mistaken. The other area that was in terms of compliance that was reported as a common, one of the common findings related to the incurrence of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We did not have any unauthorized expenditure for the portfolio, just irregular and fruitless and wasteful. And there were 7 of the audits that actually had findings on irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The irregular expenditure mainly related to non-compliance with supply chain management processes, and in some cases there were also deviations from supply chain management processes that were not properly documented. So as auditors, we could not obtain the evidence, and therefore that gave rise to the irregular expenditure. The other common area of findings with non-compliance with legislation was the management of procurement and contracts, and this is basically our non-compliance with the supply chain management processes and contract management. Here we actually had 5 of our audits that did not comply with supply chain management processes. Management, graphic number 4, management of strategic planning and performance. This is linked directly to our findings on the usefulness and the reliability of the annual performance report. You'll find here that we only have highlighted 6, and the reason for the 6 are actually our repeat findings, where we've had previously reported on findings on either usefulness and or reliability, and they reoccur in the current financial year. So those are the 6 entities that we actually reported on. HR, human human resources and consequence management, we only had three audits where we reported on in the audit report as significant findings. One is the department in relation to the verification processes that are not undertaken prior to the appointment of new officials or employees. And then we had AgriSita and StatSita where no action was taken for the incurrence of irregular expenditure in the previous years. On the area of internal audit and audit committee, we didn't have any area that we reported on in the audit report. Just we came across certain areas that require attention, specifically on the effectiveness of internal audit and audit committee. We move over to the next area, being the unauthorized, irregular, excessive, and wasteful expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure, we didn't have any for the portfolio. Irregular expenditure and excessive and wasteful expenditure, you'll note that generally there's been an increase in the for the portfolio. For the current year, we have 350 million irregular expenditure for the 14-15 financial year collection. And then for the excessive and wasteful expenditure, it's 26.6 million. You'll see that majority of the irregular expenditure is lying with the CITES and NSF. On the right-hand side of the slide, we just give the committee a highlight in terms of the entities that contributed to the irregular and CITES and wasteful expenditure, seeing the top five. SAT-CITES, 126 million of the 350 million irregular expenditure. CAT-CITES, 123 million of the 350 million. Both CAT-CITES and SAT-CITES, majority of the irregular expenditure relates to their discretionary grant contracts that were awarded where they didn't follow the required processes in terms of the grant regulation. EW-CITES was 29 million. NSF, 28 million. It relates directly to the TVET College Infrastructure Expansion Program, where the contractors that were appointed for the construction of the TVET colleges did not comply with the CIPP grading. Footbear CETA, 11 million rand of 350 million. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, SAC CETA being the highest contributor, 25 million of the 26 million fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Here again, it's related to SAT-CITES contracting processes where they awarded discretionary contracts that were over and above the allowable limits for their policy and procedures. SAT-CITES was 400 million, 400,000. T-CITES, 271,000. EW was 165,000. And services, 144,000. The next section of the presentation talks to the root causes and recommendations that gave rise to the outcomes in relation to the financial statements, the performance reporting, as well as the compliance with legislation. We've just highlighted the three most common root causes across the portfolio in terms of the outcomes that we see. If we look at the 18 reports that we have, where we had 16 unqualified with findings and we had two qualifications. Of this 18, majority of them related to slow responses by management in addressing the root causes of poor audit outcomes. What we're actually saying here is that what we find is that previous years' internal control deficiencies that are reported on are actually repeat findings that are being addressed at a very slow rate. And as a result, it's taking very long for us to see for the portfolio as a whole a turnaround in terms of achieving for this outcome. So this is the most common area, and it links directly to the audit action plan that the management has to put in place to address the internal control deficiencies that arise out of the external audit as well as the internal audit review. And One of the other things we find is that these action plans are actually implemented quite late, and it only gives the department and entities a space of 3 to 4 months to address these areas that we've been reporting on, and they've been repeated as in terms of some of these findings. So what we're actually recommending is that the action plan should actually be developed as soon as possible, as soon as internal audit findings are received or external audit findings are received. Within a month, the action plan should actually be drawn up, implemented, and monitored. And this will also form part of the committee's oversight in terms of quarterly reviews on the status of these action plans to address the internal control deficiencies and improve the status of the between audit outcomes. The other recommendation is that internal audit and audit committee should also play a key role in providing the accounting officer, the accounting authority, the minister, as well as portfolio committee, independent assurance on the progress by management on addressing these audit action plans and the internal control deficiencies that have been identified. The next highest root cause that we identified is a lack of consequences for poor performance and transgression. And I'd like to link this as well to the first root cause, the slow response. Because what we find is that the performance management systems do not necessarily address clean audit outcomes and the addressing of internal control deficiencies. And as a result, there's actually a slow move as well in addressing these deficiencies that are identified. So if you look at the performance management processes and the consequence management for poor performance, that needs to be strengthened for the portfolio. Instability or vacancies in key positions. We've noted an improvement in this specifically from the previous year to the current year as being a root cause, but it still remains a concern. Some of the rate at which the vacant positions, specifically at senior level and executive level, are being filled. And the other area to note is that they should be filled with the individuals that have the appropriate qualifications and skills as well. That brings me to the conclusion in terms of the audit outcomes for the department and its entities and the root causes. If we can pause here before we move on to the TVET colleges.
Honorable members, I take it that you are satisfied with the report and we must proceed to the next report, and then we will then engage at the end of the next report.
Chair, I will now hand over to my colleague, Simbile.
Thanks, Michelle. Good morning, Honorable Chair, as well as the Honorable Members. I'll be presenting to you the audit outcomes of the TVET colleges that were audited by the HSA for the year ended 31 December 2014. Now, if we look at the first area, which is financial statements, there was a marginal increase in this area because this year we had two TVET colleges which received unqualified opinions of the financial statements. This is an improvement from the one last year. Last year, this was the Mnambi Deputy College, and then this year we had the Mnambi Deputy College again, as well as the TVET College. Now, if you look at the qualifications, we had 6 TVET colleges receiving qualifications. These were the Central Johannesburg College, Saidi, Lovedale, Maluti, Northern Cape Eden, as well as Orbit TVET College. Then, if we look at the red area, which is the disclaimer of opinion, we had 4 in this area. And these 4 were King Inter, Lidaba, Swane South College, as well as Western College. Just on these ones, all of these 4 also received the disclaimer of opinion given in the previous financial year as well. So this is what did not improve for this year. And then lastly, if we look at the adverse opinions, we had two adverse opinions. These were ICALA, the Chief and College in the Eastern Cape, which last year had received a disclaimer of opinion. And then we also had NorthLink here in the Western Cape, which regressed from a qualified opinion in the previous year to an adverse opinion. And then currently, as things stand, there are two audits that have not been finalized. These are Eastern Cape Midlands in the Eastern Cape, as well as Tshwane South in Pretoria. Now, specifically for Tshwane South, we have not yet received the financial statements for 2014. And on Eastern Cape Midlands, the 2013 audit was actually only finalized now in July 2015. So even at that college, we have not yet received the financial statements for 31 December 2014. And then if I then move on to, just before I move on to the compliance, if you look at the main areas of qualifications, these are on property, plan and equipment, mainly around not being able to verify the items of selected for testing. We also had issues around the current assets, which was mainly the student debtors. This was mainly on the determination of the provision for impairments, which was not in compliance with applicable accounting standards. Then we also had issues on current liabilities. This mainly related to the college not being able to provide sufficient appropriate audit evidence for the reported liabilities. Then there were also some qualifications on revenue, which related to incorrectly applying the requirements of accounting standards. We also had issues around expenditure, again mainly that related to lack of supporting documentation, as well as some issues around other disclosure items, such as related parties and so on. Now, if we move on to compliance, in this area there's been no improvement amongst the colleges, because last year we had all 14 colleges with findings on compliance, and again this year all the 14 colleges have got findings on compliance. Now, the majority of this actually relates to compliance relating to internal audit, whereby the colleges have not been able to establish the internal audit departments to the standards required in terms of the continuing standards training act, which means they must be equivalent to the standards of the TFM. And then if you allow me, I will move on then to the assurance levels, whereby we assess the roles of the various role players. And again, it's important here to highlight that this assessment is only based on what we have audited, so in terms of what came out from the audit of the financial statements as well as audit of compliance with legislation. So on senior management, we have noted a slight improvement from compared to previous year, as well as for council members, as well as audit committees. The internal audit departments, we have assessed them as having been the same as in the previous year. Now, if you look at the key controls, specifically on the role that they have played in the quality of the financial statements and compliance with legislation, we find that the biggest concerns are around, firstly, the implementation of action plans, because in this area we find that either they are not adequately implemented or they are not adequately monitored. And as a result thereof, we find that there will be a lot of repeat findings in terms of findings that occurred in 2013, then we'll have some of those as well occurring again in 2014. Then another area as well is review of and monitoring of compliance with the requirements of the applicable accounting standards, as well as the applicable laws and regulations. We also find that the daily and monthly controls over the processing and reconciling of transactions are not really at the level that they could be, and as far as there needs to be an improvement in that area. Also, in terms of the human resources controls, it's still a concerning area. Specifically, we find that here, in most instances, the finance units are not adequately staffed, or if they are staffed, the staff don't really always have the required skills and are also exposed to the relevant training to be able to perform their duties optimally. And then also, one of the main areas of concern, of course, is the record keeping. because as we have seen, there's still a big number of disclaimers of opinion, which means that the college are not able to provide the required audit documentation. If I then move on to the risk areas, if you look at the quality of submitted financial statements, again, there was a marginal improvement here, because we had one college which did not have material misstatements in the submitted financial statements. This was Nambich again in the KZN. And then the other 13 colleges had material misstatements in their financial statements, which resulted in them receiving either a qualified opinion, a disclaimer of opinion, or an adverse opinion. Then if you look at battery management, it improved slightly from the previous year, in that last year we had all the colleges read, whereas some have improved from last year to this year. Specifically, those where we did not have major findings on battery management, those were Nambich again, as well as Southwest Culture. Then if you look at the area of supply chain management, first of all, what I would like to highlight here again is that this is an area that is still not yet regulated really in the Chibokojin government. Because you remember that in the other public entities department, they have to comply with the PFMA, they have to comply with your PPP Act, and so on. So there is not really much legislation around this area for Tibet colleges. Now, so what was then this assessment was based on an evaluation of the of compliance with existing policies in terms of SCM by the Tibet colleges. Now, when we did that exercise, we noted that most of them, there were instances of material non-compliance with the policy. This mainly related to, for instance, not obtaining the required number of quotations in terms of the SCM policy of the Tibet College. We also find that there are instances where the college would not have followed competitive bidding. There are also instances where the college did not obtain tax clearance certificates. We also find some instances where contracts made and contract was awarded by one person, so they evaluated and awarded the contract by themselves. No one else was involved in that process. But this was more an isolated instance than a general or commonly prevalent non-compliance. And then also, if I then move on to financial health, this area has deteriorated a little bit from what we had last year. So about half of the civil colleges are in the red area, which means they've got material findings on material non-favorable indicators on financial health, and then the other half had indicators, but not were not material in terms of them being unfavorable. And then human resource management, as I indicated earlier, that this is still an area of concern, so we've not really noted much improvement in this area. And then on the IT environment, we've noted some improvements compared to last year. Now, if we look at the main root causes for the findings on compliance, as well as on the findings on the financial statements, the first item, the main root cause is slow response by management. So this I would like to link to the, if you look at the key controls, we had concerns around the implementation of action plans. So this slow response by management specifically talks to that they do not really act speedily enough to actually address the findings raised in the previous year. So there needs to be improvement in that regard. So what we think there is that the performance agreements of the officials should actually incorporate addressing the previous year audit findings. We think that will help it to improve in terms of the rate at which they're implementing the required recommendations. Then also we have concerns in some colleges around the competencies of the key officials in terms of them having the right skills to execute their functions. Specifically, you will remember that at the beginning of the 2013-2014 financial year, there was a change from the accounting framework applied by the colleges. Previously, they applied SA GAAP, and now they're applying the
South African standard of never recognize accounting practice. So we found that in some instances the staff did not always understand to the required level the requirements of the standards of accounting. And then also one of the main records that we have is the instability of vacancies in key positions. Now part of this is contributed to by the department because of the freezing on the field of some positions. But as I indicated earlier that we are concerned around in terms of having the required number of people as well in the finance units over and above the position of the deputy principal finance. And then also just ensuring that the staff that are also in those positions, they get the required training as well to be able to understand the requirements of both the accounting framework as well as the requirements of the legislation. Chair, that is the end of my presentation on the TVET colleges. As we have indicated, this covers only those audited by the HGSA. We have not covered those that are not audited by the HGSA. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you so much for the two presentations. I will now call upon the DG maybe to comment before I open for a discussion. You are okay. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we now have opened for discussion. Upon reflection, shall you then come in and interrogate the presentation. Professor Pulisa?
Noting, Chair, but it's just a point of noting before I interrogate.
Okay.
I'm noting that there is a sizable amount of information that we're not privy to that one could get from the presentation. I'm just finding out from you, Chair, whether it would it be possible, because from time to time the presenters kept on augmenting the slides.
What I'm aware of is that...
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, can I move then to the question? What's clear, what's abundantly clear that from the presentation is that there is really a problem with some CETAs and also with the TVET colleges. And this has been going on for some time. I'm wondering, Chair, whether there has been, from the side of the AG, some recommendations that have been made, because one understands that we have been trying fall as the members about the performance of some sitters. I know that with some sitters there is a kind of an improvement, but I also note with the TVET colleges there is some kind of stagnancy. Particularly with Mnambithi TVET College. I know it's not within your paper to improve, but you can always recommend to the department or to the CETA concerns. So that's my take, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other intervention? Honorable Professor Pozoli, Honorable Member Suela, Honorable Member Mahunya Pilu, and then Honorable Member Bata, and then Honourable Member in that order.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I'd like to point out that Minister Nzimande did undertake to come to portfolio committee meetings when his department's performance was under scrutiny, and once again he has not come. And I would like to express my unhappiness and object to this situation. Secondly, as far as the AG's observations of all these problems in the CETAs, and interestingly in the department itself, and then even worse in the TVET colleges, I'd like some notion from the AG as to what the real problem is. It seems as in the TVET colleges, the department has put in place members of SICA as the CFO to help
train these colleges in how to get a clean audit. But it seems as though those members of SAICA have come across such enormous problems in management, in poor quality of staff, and probably in many cases in irregular expenditure and forms of corruption and people getting kickbacks from things that are going on there, that the CFOs put in there by SAICA seem not to be able to fix the problem. And I think, therefore, the AG may need to recommend to us some further steps that the department could take in addition to putting in those members of SAICA. We can't leave it all up to the single chief financial officer to solve all the problems of mismanagement and ineptitude that seem to be the case in the worst of these institutions. And then I'd also, my third question is, as far as lack of consequence management is concerned, it looks as though your last year's recommendations were only taken up right towards the end of the year in order to address them, and therefore we find that the addressing of the recommendations has been slow and inadequate. The DG maybe would like to talk about that. Why has there been this slow response? What are the intent to do about it? What does the Auditor General recommend? How will it be remedied next year so we don't have the same thing again? Thank you.
Honorable Pozzoli, next. Honorable Member Suela.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. From the presentations that we received, it is clear that there are some concerns that were raised previously and obviously not attended to by some. Hence the recommendations by the AGSA for top management to fast track or perhaps to implement the action plans earlier, so that by the time they report, there seem to be action that have been taken to correct the thing. But this is not happening. What I would like to find out, who should enforce these things? Who should make sure that these things is done? Because we cannot come here and always lament that there are some people who are not doing their work, yet they are keeping their work. That is a concern for me. And secondly, the presentations also say that some Tibet colleges, particularly in the Eastern Cape Midland, do not provide the financial reports as required on time for AGSA to be able to do its work. What happens then? Do you wait for them until at an opportune time and then you start auditing? What happened in the process? Do you leave them like that? Or particularly because they are using public press, and anybody who gives that money should actually account. Thank you.
Over to you, Honorable Member Makhuma Pilu.
Thank you, Chair, to give me this opportunity. Referring to slide number 7 on page 6, there is a finding that two sitters were unable to make the corrections with regard to financial health. What are those two sitters? What made them not to correct those errors? And which errors were identified in that area? And then, referring to page 11, I'm not sure about the slide, there is a say that internal control will be developed, will be implemented, and will be monitored within a month's time. I just wanted to know, what mechanisms are you going to use to speed up the process? And then again, there is the other issue that in our oversight visit to the Western Cape, Tibet colleges, they report reported that there is a challenge in the interpretation of the auditing. Apparently, what was accepted by internal auditors before they were audited by AXA is not accepted by AXA. May AXA explain this? Has AXA explained the interpretation to the Tibet colleges? Were there any workshops held with Tibet colleges by AXA before? Tibet colleges were audited by AXA. If yes, could you please explain the nature of workshops held? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mahumatilu, Honorable Member Mbata.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question will be the explanation given by Auditor General SA on the reason for some of the entities of the department to continue to falter, even though it's understandable. But if you look at how those entities, in particular the sitters, are set up, and if you look at the age of each one of them, it may tell you that if you do not take harsher actions, you are not going to get anywhere, because there is no reason for some of them now to continue to falter during the processes of the audit. I just want to start with the first question. It is not rock science as to who should be responsible, whether it is within the Tibet College or it is with the theater. Firstly, you have the organogram of the organization, and then you have the chief executive, you have the chief financial officer, and then you have the audit committee. Now, if the work of the chief financial office consistently is not performed well, that must be the responsibility of the supervisor, the chief executive officer, and the audit team. And I'm wondering, for instance, in the interest of what has been happening with some of the sitters, without going to specifications, what is your experience with the repeating offenders? What is your experience as a responsibility of the audit committees? Because at some point before the portfolio committee, there is an existing oversight there. What do you say to them? What do you pose as questions? What is it that they respond with? Secondly, when you look at the referred sitters who are consistently repeat offenders, it's not only on financial matters. Some of them, I happen even to get reports from my colleagues who happen to sit, for instance, the sports recreation one. If it was my choice, that would have been closed long time ago. Because they are not only defaulting on the financial reporting, it's also on the programs. There is absolutely nothing going down. There is absolutely nothing that benefits communities except the cronies and those that are in the circles of the officials and the board members of the sector, in particular that one. Now, when you look at slide 9, the errors that have consistently happened in the financial statements submitted, I would like to have one clarity there. Is it because majority of the entities do not have internal audit units? Or maybe the question in the first instance should be, how many of these entities we are referring into here have internal audit units? Because the role of the internal audit unit is to get you guys prepared
it is also to shorten your lifespan and your visit, and hence make sure that your work in each of these entities look livable, rather than always receiving nightmares whenever when you visit these entities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Bacha. The next is Honourable Member Mkunu.
Thank you, Chair. And may I thank the AG's office for the presentation. It gives us a clear picture as to how public funds are used by the Department of Higher Education. Let me again appreciate the presence of the DG as the accounting officer of the department. My question, in our oversight visit to North Link Tivet College, the management expressed that audit by AXA is very expensive and is at 4 million. May AXA please explain this figure, because to me it was a bit too much. Secondly, I mean, in the overall, your presentation reflected that internal audit controls seems to be a challenge in most of the entities. This is reflected in the repeated findings of no improvement around this area. Can the department explain whether they have a plan to address internal control deficiencies? Because what they are saying then reflects badly on the department. So I would like to know whether they have a plan. Have they looked at this, and what are they planning to do? Let me commend that some CITAs have achieved clean audit. However, there are still challenges in most CITAs as they seem to have internal control challenges. In respect of irregular, wasteful, or fruitless expenditure. To talk about this is not enough. We need to do something. What is the department's role to ensure that these findings do not recur? What is AXA recommendation in this regard? I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mkunu. I will now call upon Honourable Member Ketana.
The first one on the, I thought when they mentioned apologies, they said the minister and the deputy minister is attending the cabinet meeting. Indeed, it is important that when report and performance of the department is presented, if possible, the minister should be around. What are we going to do with our scheduling? Because I thought cabinet was on Wednesday, and if it is on Tuesday, this should have afforded us an opportunity. I think when we reschedule in the future, we should make sure that though there's that program of the minister attending cabinet, somehow we can find a way to get him to attend the performance of the department. So the point of emphasis and all the concerns that are there, he'll be there to hear it. I'm just saying that this thing of us having a portfolio committee and a very important report and performance be given while the minister is committed in a cabinet meeting, which is also a priority in his program, is making it very difficult for the portfolio and the minister to cooperate and run smooth. So I'm just saying we need to think of a way of sorting this out. Just on the content, indeed, I mean, the other time we were told that through migration, a lot of TVET colleges were assisted through professional people being outsourced there to matters. Can the department perhaps indicate why that is not yielding results? Though chartered accountants are there to assist, it looks like the picture is not yet improved. And why is that the situation? Haven't they had enough time, or do we still need to give them some more time? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kekana. I will now hand over to AXA to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond with the assistance of my colleagues, Simbungile and Sazi, for the Quebec colleges. I will respond in relation to the department and the speakers. I think generally, perhaps to highlight, I think most of the questions raised, Chairperson, relate to cost-cutting root causes that we've identified. The question's been asked, why are we experiencing these challenges, and what are the root causes that are giving rise to these challenges? The main challenge is that you'll note that if we have to do a audit outcome history analysis, is that it's repeat findings. And it goes back to the consequence management and performance management processes. How robust are these processes in relation to addressing internal control deficiencies, whether it's identified by the AGSA or internal audit? How does this impact on the performance of the department or the entities, their performance management processes? And that's where we actually find there's not a link between the two of them. And also driving the clean audit outcome. So that really needs attention in terms of the performance management processes and the consequence management. The other area is the action plans that are drawn up. You know that with the external audit processes, we have three phases in our audit. We have a planning process, we have an interim audit process, and we have a final audit process. And during each of these processes, we will highlight to management some of the areas that we identify that the controls are not functioning and need to be improved to achieve the clean audit outcome. And generally what we find is that the audit action plans are normally only drawn up after the final audit, which is after we issue our audit report on the 31st of July. So we recommend that continuously management needs to look at the internal control deficiencies that are reported by us. We also have internal audits that go in and are there more often than we are as external audits. And internal audits also report on control deficiencies. So management also needs to look at those internal control deficiencies that are identified by internal audits and put actions in place to address these. The first question with regards to challenges with the seekers and what have been our recommendations as the AGSA to address these challenges. In terms of our repeat findings, if we look at our financial statements, the errors identified in the financial statements, if we look at performance reporting, the findings that we have with regards to usefulness as well as the reliability of the annual performance report, we basically have recommended to the seekers to also look at specifically the accounting authority needs to take accountability for the implementation of the action plan. Make sure that management is actually implementing those action plans and that the internal control deficiencies are being addressed. So, because previously we have made these recommendations to management and we find ourselves where we are. And that oversight from the part of the accounting authority is very critical if you look at the procedures. So in terms of consequence management and performance management and slow responses, the accounting authorities also have a role to play to ensure that these outcomes are actually achieved. If we look at the action plans that are only implemented towards the end of the year, that's correct. that in most instances our action plans are actually only finalized October and implemented then in the last 4 months of the financial year, which doesn't actually give the entity or the department sufficient time to put those controls in place and address those areas of concern that have arisen during the previous year. And as a result, we find ourselves with these recurring findings. And that's one of the reasons I'm saying, again, in terms of consequence management and performance management, it's actually critical that internal control responsibilities is every single individual's responsibility in the department or in the entity. It does not just lie with the DG or the senior management. It's every individual's responsibility to adhere to the internal control of that specific organization. The responsibility to ensure that action plans are implemented is actually the responsibility of the, in the case of the department, it would be the DG and the minister. And in the case of our entities, it would be the CEO and the accounting authority. The next question related to the two seekers that had qualified opinions, specifically T CETA and W and R CETA. T CETA is actually a recurring qualification. It actually relates to, I think it was in 2005-06 when they received funds from the National Skills Fund for a specific project. Unfortunately, TCETA could not produce documents for the money spent back in 2005-06. And to date, they are still struggling to find the documents for that money spent. So they have been engaging with the NSF to see how they can actually resolve this matter. With WNR CETA, the qualifications related specifically to our discretionary grant commitments, discretionary grant contracts. Unfortunately, the challenge was that the project management over the discretionary grant, and similarly with many CETAs, is that it doesn't happen throughout the year in terms of project management, and that's the key function of the CETA. The project managing and monitoring of what's happening out there with regard to the allocation of their funds. So WNR, in terms of their discretionary contracts that were disclosed in the financial statements, there were actually a significant number of errors that were identified by the audit team. And WNR could not correct these errors because those controls are not functioning during the year. What mechanisms should be used to speed up action plans? Our recommendation is that action plans need to be implemented within a month of receipt of the internal audit findings and the external audit findings. And like I mentioned, we find that this is not happening. It actually takes a long while before action plans are actually finalized and implemented. And if you look at entities, they're much smaller than the department as well. So it shouldn't take them as long as the department to finalize their action plans and implement. Our experience as the audit team with our repeat offenders at the CETAs, I think I've already touched on this with our repeat findings and the root causes in relation to the consequence management and the performance management and the lack thereof. The question raised specifically on internal audits, do we have internal audits at our entity? Yes, we do have internal audits at the department as well as our 26 entities. The question is whether internal audits is effective or not, and it's twofold. I think internal audits can only come in and start with their review processes if management is ready for them and have implemented the controls to address the internal control deficiency. If management has not made a move on that, internal audit would come in and have the same findings as the previous year. That's the one area. The other area that we find is that internal audit processes normally start during the second half of the year, which is also a timing issue that internal audit processes are a bit late, but there again it could be linked to management's readiness for internal audit as well. which then has an impact on whether internal audit is actually effective throughout the 12-month period. And in order for audit committee to play its oversight role, it's very dependent on internal audit. Okay. With regards to our irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred, majority of it, we have 350 million rand. Majority of that related to the SAP ITA and CAT ITA, which is about 250 million, is again related to their discretionary functions, the core functions of the reserve. CAT ITA, both CAT ITA and SAP ITA have been placed under administration, specifically relating to the governance issues that the member rightly pointed to. Would give rise now with, under the administration process that we've identified these irregular expenditure in relation to the way contracts are awarded. It's not in line with the policies and procedures, and it's not in line with the grant regulations to the Skills Development Act. That's the challenge we have with the irregular expenditure. The other challenge is where we had non-compliance with supply chain management processes. So the supply chain management processes have to be strengthened. We need to make sure that it's capacitated with the individuals that have the appropriate skills and experience. That's one of the things. The other things we identified with supply chain management processes is that from a compliance monitoring point of view, mechanisms have to be put in place, not as a checklist, to ensure that supply chain management is very onerous from a compliance point of view. So there should be some sort of checklist in place to assist in ensuring that management has complied with all the requirements in terms of supply chain management. I hope I have addressed the queries on the department as well as the teacher before I hand over to the teacher and Sadi.
Thank you, Chair. I will try and answer most of the questions around the Tibet colleges, but my colleagues in the back will also assist me specifically on the North Link issues. One of the questions that was asked was in terms of the recommendations around the Tibet colleges for improving performance. Our main recommendations in this regard are firstly around improving request management. Like I mentioned earlier, most of the issues we find that the colleges are not able to provide us with the evidence that we need to support what is recorded in the financial statements. So the colleges need to invest time in terms of improving those controls, establishing proper policies and procedures, actually guide the staff, you know, what documents need to be kept, specifically for the audit purposes. Also, the one of our main recommendations is around the implementation of action plans, that the principal, the council must actually monitor the implementation of action plans. Because at the conclusion of every audit, we give the college findings and they respond to those findings, indicating what they're going to do to actually address those findings. But we find that at the moment, not enough is being done to actually implement those commitments as well as to monitor those commitments. So that's something that needs to be improved in terms of by the principal as well as the council, in terms of holding the staff accountable. Also, one of the things that we have mentioned is that is the capacity of the finance units. They must be properly skilled as well as with the adequate number of staff within the finance units. And then also there needs to be improvement in the review of monitoring of compliance with the requirements of the accounting framework as well as compliance legislation. And in this regard, internal audit plays quite an important role. Like Michelle has mentioned, that internal audit is always there. So they should be able to monitor the implementation as well as review the compliance by the colleges. And then there was a question around the stagnation in the civil colleges outcomes, specifically Mnambithi was mentioned. Actually, as things stand, based on what we've audited, Mnambithi is one of the better performing colleges based on what we've audited so far. But it is true that there is stagnation in the outcomes overall. And I would like to link this again to the action plans, because if the actions that should be taken are not taken, then we are going to find that there is no improvement in the empowerment. So that's what really needs to be prioritized. And then there was a question around the involvement of the SAICA,
members. Previously, the SACA members were basically consultants. They did not have decision-making powers. So because of that, really, if management was not willing to implement what was required, then nothing would happen. But now that they've been appointed as deputy principals of finance, they will have some decision-making power. So hopefully with that intervention, we'll be able to see more improvement happening at the different colleges. And then specifically around who should make sure that things are done, in the TV and college environment, the primary and ultimate responsible party for that is the council. And then obviously below the council is the principal. So those are the two main parties responsible to make sure that things are happening at the TV and colleges. Then there was a question around what does the HSA do when the colleges don't provide reports, as has been the case with Eastern Cape Midlands as well as Swane North. What we do in this regard is to escalate to the department, because ultimately as HSA we're not in the position to force the colleges to provide us with financial statements. So the college with its influence over, the department with influence over the colleges is best placed to actually push them and make sure that they are providing what's required to the auditors. So whenever we've had this instance, we've always escalated to the department. And they have tried to actually assist in some instances, but it's still a problem. Like Midlands, there was also an issue around the previous CFO. I think that was recommended to the college, has been now redeployed to another college. And then Swane North has got a backlog in the audits, because as things stand, we have not received the outcomes for 2012, 2013. So the current auditors are actually still trying to finalize those audits. So that's one of the reasons why they will not be able to provide HSA with financial statements for 2014. Because until that backlog is cleared, they're not able to provide us with what we need for 2014. So the last we heard that they were still trying to finalize those financial statements for 2012 and 2013. And then there was also a question raised about what was previously accepted by other auditors is not acceptable by the SSA. What I can say in this regard, Chair, is that ultimately what is considered to be sufficient appropriate audit evidence is dependent on the auditor. So we will make our own professional judgment in terms of for this transaction, for this account balance, what will consider to be an acceptable audit evidence. Now, that may not necessarily be the same as what the other auditors consider to be sufficient, but ultimately we have to decide for our purposes what we make acceptable. And also what we have found is that previously, you know, the auditors have not gone into as much detail in terms of testing as we do, you know. So, but again, in terms of the nature of the procedures, again, it's the auditor that determines what procedures they are going to perform to get that data that I need. And then there was a question around, did we hold workshops with the different colleges? My colleague, Pablo, is going to answer that. But before I hand over to you, Pablo, let me just finish addressing the rest of my questions first. Okay. Then there was a question around the audit fees. Specifically to not relating to NotLink. I'll leave my colleagues there to answer for NotLink, but just on the audit fees issue in Geneva, I would firstly want to say that, like I've mentioned, each firm has got its own audit methodology. Now, the HSA has got its own methodology, the private firms would have their own methodology. So, like I've mentioned, in the testing that we have performed at the colleges, we have gotten into a lot of detail in terms of our testing, which it appears that was not the case by the previous auditors. Now, again, this is based on our own assessment of what the risk areas are within the TVET colleges and what documents we would think we need to look at. And also in terms of the number of transactions that are tested, it also varies from firm to firm. So you may find that the previous auditors may have audited 15 items, 20 items, and then when we took over the audit, we are auditing 50 items. It's based because of our methodology and our assessment of risk. So obviously that is going to have influence on the audit fees. So that's why currently there's a big discrepancy between what the previous ones were charging and what the HSA is charging. And then also another influence on the audit fees is the quality of information that we receive from the TVET colleges. Because what we often find is that the initial information submitted is either of poor quality or is incomplete. Now, those will contribute to an increase in audit fees, because if the information is of poor quality, it means that the college is going to have to go back and adjust that information so that it's corrected. So, and what we often find is that the colleges want to make adjustment upon adjustment upon adjustment. Whereas in terms of our methodology, our standard is that we'll allow you once to make adjustments. If you have not made those adjustments to our satisfaction, we would then report based on what we initially submitted. But the colleges, they fight and fight and fight in this regard. And then as a result, we find ourselves having to audit multiple times. And again, that contributes because now we have to be setting work. So that impacts audit fees as well. And then also the issue of timeliness. I've mentioned earlier that we also find that in most instances, the colleges are not able to provide us with the evidence that we need for what is recorded in the financial statements. And this does not come through initially when you request that information. It's after you have waited and waited and waited, and then they'll come back to you and say, no, we're not able to find this documentation. So, unfortunately, the way our environment works is that we charge based on the time. So just because that the college did not provide that information, it does not mean that when the staff was sitting there, they would necessarily not charge, because we charge based on time. Obviously, they will try and find other documents that we can expect in the meantime, but that's not always possible. And then, so those are the inputs I wanted to make around the audit fees. And then there was also talk about the migration. And a lot of assistance has been provided to the colleges. That what I would just like to highlight on this one is that the migration has only taken place, I think, in April of this year. So the audit that we were conducting, the most recent that concluded, was that 2014. So the impact of that migration will not have been reflected in 2014. We should only see that coming through for the 2015 financial year that we're going to be auditing next year. And then that lastly, I would also just like to mention as well that for 2015, there will be an additional 14 colleges that will be audited by the HSA. Now, we are going to be holding workshops with these colleges to actually help them prepare and be ready for us. And we are supposed to have these workshops in early December. We had actually wanted to have this much earlier. We had wanted to have this month, but then the department indicated that they've got some other things that they need to be attending to over the next month or so. So they could only avail the staff that we need to conduct the workshops in early December. And then on that note, I'm going to hand over to Pablo to talk about the workshops. And then after that, my colleagues will specifically deal with the modeling issues. Thanks, sir.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. On the workshop, I think we do have a workshop. The one that we did have a workshop for all the TVET colleagues that we ordered, and we invite them with the CFO. We also have the FICA supporting team and TVET representative. So, we cover the AGSA audit process and also look into the, we give a feedback on the last year TVET audit outcome. But then to further extend, actually, after the audit, we did identify the need for the individual workshop with the college. We have the workshop and actually go through the AG audit process to clarify, to have a two-way communication, understanding the our process and look into the concern item. Looking into the concern, actually, at the specific entity. So we're able to focus more what is the control deficiency or the misstatement they have. So those workshops actually we also invited to the principal. In some cases, we also invited the council members. So then we also highlight the important matter about the action plan, because action plan is one of the areas actually we identify as a control deficiency at the TVET. The action plan we have actually trying to emphasize the need of the CFO to review the principal to actually take the ownership of the action plan, as well as involving the internal auditors and the audit committee looking into these, because that goes further the, to enhance the process. But I think overall that workshop that we have so far, we have them, and also we've seen that the action plan is actually driving still slow. I think that's the that's what we're still concerned on the outcome of the workshop this far. Okay, I think that's for the action plan and the workshop. Let me pass.
With your permission, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think I'll cover the bit on the NorthLink keyword. Now, I think a bit of background on the college is that, number one, the council was appointed late. And now, because the council was appointed late, the audit committee was appointed late. Because the audit committee was appointed late, there was no internal audit. Now, what would normally happen is the fact that internal audits throughout the year would actually look at the processes and the controls that are already existing within the organization. And then they would recommend what you need to correct and then actually give some sort of guidance and a heads up before we come and audit. So in this instance, that was not able to happen. So we found ourselves in a situation where, you know, as far as the findings from the previous year, you know, many of them were actually not resolved. I think number two was also important to note is the fact that last year when we went to audit, there was an acting principal and the CFO that we worked with last year has actually resigned and they've got a new one now. So as far as continuity as well in discussing the issues that we had last year, we find that there was that take. One, in terms of audit committee, council, and also principal, CFO, we essentially had to start from scratch. Now, over and above that, or notwithstanding that, what we do in all our audits and what we did with NorthLink as well was the fact that after the audit, we actually had a debriefing with them to say, listen, this is what worked, this is what didn't work, this is what you need to do going forward. We also go and visit on a quarterly basis to follow up what is actually happening, what progress has been made to resolve the things that we found so that we may minimize the chances of them reoccurring. So essentially when it comes to NorthLink, that was the situation. Now when we do our audit there, we actually sit down before the audit starts and we say, this is the scope of the audit and this is how, number one, we are going to test. These are the processes that we're going to follow. This is how we're going to report. And, you know, for instance, when we test, we look at the circulars. And I think there's a circular now that's just come out from from DHET, the National Department, on the need for action plans and the fact that the colleges need to have action plans. So we follow up on those sort of things. We also talk to the fact that we're going to audit according to the accounting framework. Now, in this particular instance, the college has felt that the accounting framework, there are things that they don't agree with. And we said, well, we have to audit according to the accounting framework. If you have a problem with the accounting framework, we are not the people to take that up with. But this accounting framework is standard for everyone. It's not an interpretation issue, but it's the fact that these are the minimum things that need to be in your financial statements. So it was that kind of engagement, Chair. So it was a difficult process, but we're hoping that going forward we will be able to resolve those things. As far as the audit fee of $4 million is concerned, what we also do is that we very clear up front when we set the scope of the audit to say, our audit will be based on the risks that we identified. And before we commence with this audit, we are going to sit down with management and agree on these are the risks that we have identified. These are the things we're going to focus on. This is the fee we're going to use, and this is the audit fee that we're going to use. And we're very clear up front in that instance to say, this audit fee assumes that everything will need to be done once. It assumes that when you request information, we will get it within the agreed time frames, and also, if there's additional work that we need to do, we'll have to agree up on that upfront because it's not included in this budget. Now, the audit fee of $4 million is actually for the previous two audits. The previous audit was about 2.6, and the problem there was the fact that we had agreed on an audit fee of about 1.4. And what happened is what Mr. Mbungu is talking about, in the fact that we audited, we found errors, management wanted to correct those things. We said we'll give you time to correct those things, but if we selected a sample, let's say there are 100 assets on your asset register, and we select a sample of 10, and we found that 8 of those assets, there are issues with them. Either we can't find them, or the amount you've included them in them, you know, in the financial statements is incorrect, whatever the case may be. We find issue with those 8 that we have selected. You can't just correct those 8. You have to go and look at that issue throughout the 100. Now, when you correct, you told us we corrected, we'll select a different sample, which means we have to re-audit, because otherwise you can't just look at the ones that, the 8 that we identified as issues, and you fix those ones. So that was the kind of issue that we had, because we went back and we tested, we found that actually not all the issues have been corrected, there were still issues. So it was a back and forth, which was why the audit fee actually went up and was more than what it was intended to be. Now, in the current year, the audit fee was agreed at 1.7 million. And what happened was that we also were supposed to receive the financial statements at 31 March. We didn't get those financial statements at 31 March. We didn't get them in April when we were supposed to get them. We didn't get them in June when we were supposed to get them. Eventually, we got a set of financial statements on 13 July, which we audited. We found errors on those, and then we said, listen, we found errors. We've also audited some of your records, and we've allowed corrections and whatnot. We can't allow any more corrections. We have to finish with the audit. And number two, we have found in the past that spending money on us auditing these things will not yield any positive results. It's not a good way to spend money. So we cut off on those as well. So in a nutshell, that is the situation with NorthLink. I'm going into this detail because I've received a report back to say during the site visit, there were these sort of complaints. Unfortunately, I did not get wind that there was this visit, so I was not able to be there. So I'm taking this opportunity to actually go into the detail. I'm only responding based on what I hear, you know, was a discussion that was held, and I'm trying to anticipate any other questions that you might have and any gaps that you might have had from that interaction. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the National Skills Fund's problems don't look to me any smaller than those of some of the places that have had an adverse audit. If you look on page 29 of your presentation, or your document, not your presentation, you identify material errors were identified in the areas of administrative expenses, grant disbursements, deferred expenditure, property, plant and equipment payables, exchange transactions, provisions, irregular expenditure, disclosure, blah, 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 blah. And you can read the rest of the description of what was found in the National Skills Fund, as well as the number of areas that were of concern in your appendix at the end. I'm wondering why the National Skills Fund did not receive a more unfavorable audit. My second question is, some of the universities worsened, and we haven't discussed that really, and we don't usually discuss universities because their audits are done by them rather than by the AG. But this does seem to me to be an opportunity for us to talk about the universities that have worsened and perhaps the DG or would be the person there. And could you also then finally give us a sense of how this department compares to other government departments? Are we looking at a department that has severe problems in relation to the range of government departments as a whole, or are we looking at one of the best departments, or are we looking at a middle range department? Since we don't see the AG reports of all the other departments, I think it would be good to know how the AG assesses this department in general terms. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
continue my follow up on the entities and particularly on the status. I just want to go to page 10 of your presentation. You have tabulated the main offenders there. In particular on very, very unjustifiable actions and activities on the accounting front, for instance, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And according to Treasury regulations, these are very serious offenses. And they carry very serious consequences to executives to an extent that some of the executives may or may not have their contracts renewed, may be sitting with disciplinary hearings, some of them with final warnings. Now, I just want to hear from you. What are your experiences after giving these results? I know it has been a short experience, or what we call a short experience with the councils, but has councils taken any form of action? If in the in the case of Tibet colleges, but in this instance, the boards of these sitters in particular, Fasita, and this other Turkish one, and so the list goes on. What has been their own response as a board to these reports? And then the last comment and the question is page 11. When you speak consequence and lack of consequence, and as a result the continuation of poor performance and the continuation of transgression, I just want to get a sense, for instance, when the sitters in particular have provided you with information, do you, as a result of not having received the information on time, do you share with the audit committees of the sitters the main, what I would say, persons that are making the activity of auditing difficult? For instance, where I used to work before, if there's been escalated audit fees as a result of an executive inaction, there was a charge attached to those actions, and that charge will lead to the executive being held accountable. That's what you call consequence management. Now, do you have things like that? Because this mustn't look like science. It's an activity, it's a role. Somebody must take charge. Now, to an extent that it becomes 50%, that's a very, very serious way of not actually holding the public institution accountable, or the public institutions at large accountable. And I noticed also with great interest the responsibilities of the political authority and how the political authority intends to close the window in the summary of what is called the minister's comments. I note all those comments, but at some point, during the course of your activities, besides what you recommend here, there are some managerial interactions between yourselves and those in charge. In the sector, for instance, it could be an acting CEO, because there's perpetually a permanent acting role there somewhere, and in the Tibet colleges, it could be the deputy principal of finance. When you have reported the inaction of these persons, what does the boards or the audit committees do as an action? Because we may be too far a distance here. those persons are entitled to actions as a result of their responsibilities. What is it that they do when you have actually submitted these documents to them? Because we may be too late here.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to action plans to address audit control deficiencies, we have said that they could be implemented within a month. I want you to school me on the implications of your findings or reports to the department or the entities concerned. For me, I think that there must be a recommendation like blacklisting or blocking of the entities of the serial defaulters. If you repeatedly find something which is non-compliant, 2012, 2013, so many years, three consecutive financial years with no improvement, what is the implication of that? I'm just asking myself, with Auditor General, do we just listen at what the report, how the monies are used? So after that, what happens? Do you have sort of link with National Treasury to say that these bodies should not have access to funding? My concern is there, because if we continually say, okay, they've done this, this is the report, it's bad, what happens thereafter? What is the implication? Because people will continue to mismanage because we fund, but they are not using monies in the respect, in the right way, like the sitters that have been highlighted there on your page 10.
Thank you, Honorable Shino, Honorable Professor Kulisa.
Yes, Chair. I think my question is linked to the questions that have been asked, but I wanted to hear from the AG whether really these matters are escalated to the department. Because as far as I understand, if the council or if the board or if the management within the CETA or TVET College do not perform, management, so to say, do not perform, and there should be some kind of a punitive measure taken against those. And at the end of the day, the department has got to act. And it's linked to the recommendation to the department with regard to the punitive measures that are taken. Because it cannot be always business as usual, because these things have been recurring. For how long should they be recurring? That is the question. If PSETA, WNR CETA doesn't perform, and what is it that is done? So the council is not acting, management is not acting, chief financial officers or deputy finance managers do not act. At the end of the day, they report to the department. Same applies to universities that Honorable Bosol was mentioning, even if we're not going to engage them. They may be autonomous, but at the end of the day, they report to the Department of Higher Education and Training. That's where the buck stops. You know, I wanted to hear whether there are any recommendations, whether you sit down with the department to engage these matters. Chair, my question looks more or less the same as the other question.
Thank you very much for the question. Now come over to the to AXA to respond. Thank you, Chairperson. The first question with regards to NSF in terms of the errors that we identified in the financial statements. If you look at the annual performance report, there were, yes, a numerous number of errors that were identified. The difference is that NSF were able to correct all the errors that we identified that led to them receiving an unqualified opinion. Had they not made those corrections, then their opinion would have looked worse off. The challenge with NSF is that they don't have a process in place where the financial system in terms of what they require to report on from the financial reporting framework processes take place throughout the year. If you look at NSF, they're required to be on what we call the accrual basis of accounting in terms of their financial reporting framework, which is GRAP. NSF during the year keeps records on the cash basis of accounting. And then when we get to the year end, they need to then convert that into the GRAP requirement. And that's where the errors actually occur, and hence the number of errors that we actually identified. Similarly, with the performance reporting processes, NSF doesn't have a process to collate the information during the year that relates to their performance and where the money is spent and what's happening on it, because they don't have the systems and processes to do it. So again, everything happens at year end, and as a result, nothing happens during the year. Everything happens at year end. It's more prone to errors, and hence the errors that we identified. So that's one of the challenges at the NSF. The other challenge at NSF is actually the capacity. In terms of the number of bodies that they actually have, they only an establishment of 57 for the $5 billion fund. So it just doesn't talk to number what is expected of them to what they need to do. The other area that NSF needs to look at is whether they do have people of the required skills for both specifically on performance reporting, because there's a lot of money that's going into their projects out there, so they need to ensure that they're capacitated with the right individuals for performance reporting and performance monitoring. Currently, NSF does not have an individual responsible for coordinating performance reporting. So those are the challenges that we have at NSF, and that's the reason why we ended up with an unqualified opinion. So they were able to actually make all those corrections that we recommended. With regards to the department and the severity of the problems at the department itself in comparison to other departments, perhaps I'd just like to highlight to the committee that the AGSA does produce a report called the General Report, where it's a consolidation of outcomes for all national departments, and then we have one for provincial departments as well. And it would give you a good sense in terms of the performance of the department against the other departments. But saying that, I think the higher education portfolio is an exception to other departments. It is the biggest portfolio with 100 entities that it's responsible for. So there is no other department with that responsibility. So I think it would also be a bit unfair unto the department to compare them to any other department, given their responsibilities from a monitoring and oversight perspective. With the seekers, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure incurred, and whether there's any consequences or actions for the transgressors. From a non-compliance perspective, we did have two seekers where we reported that the board did not take action against the individuals that transgressed in terms of the incurrence of irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful. Those were AgriSeeker and StatSeeker. For TechSeeker and StatSeeker, those two seekers are currently under administration, and the administrators are busy with investigation processes to uncover the root causes for these irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was identified. And then when we go into the 15-16 year, we will then follow up on what actions were taken based on the outcome of those investigations. With the other seekers that we do have irregular expenditure, the board has actually undertaken investigations, and they have, in the case of Foodbed, for example, instituted disciplinary actions against the respective individuals that were found guilty. So yes, there are processes in some instances in place to actually from the board to go in and investigate and to take action against the transgressors. But we do have instances where that the actions, investigations are undertaken, but the actions are not forthcoming based on the results of the investigation. Okay. With regards to where teachers are not providing information, you know, if we don't receive the information during audit processes, do we escalate to the audit committee? The answer is yes, we do have a process, firstly within the audit process where we have audit scaling committee meetings with management, which includes the CFO and CEO, and we communicate all of the challenges that they're facing. And if we aren't able to resolve our challenges, specifically with the receipt of information at those meetings, then we have the opportunity to also escalate to the chairs of audit committees. So we do make our chairs of audit committees aware of significant challenges that we're having during the audit processes. The next question raised was in relation to managerial actions between the AGSA and the seekers and the assurance provided to portfolio committee, specifically by management. If we looking at the audit process, once we've concluded an audit, we do engage with management based on the outcomes of the audit to analyze the root causes and what processes or controls need to be implemented to address those root causes. Yes, I agree. By the time it gets to you as portfolio committee to monitor in terms of whether the entities have actually addressed the internal control deficiencies, the action plans are actually effective, may be too late. And that's the reason why internal audits and the audit committee are key in providing you that assurance as well. Because internal audit is supposed to look at the implementation of the audit plan, of the audit plan, to determine whether the internal control deficiencies have actually been addressed. So they're the independent assurance providers. So through audit committee, you as portfolio committee should be able to get that assurance. And that's actually one of the recommendations we would like to make to you as portfolio committee from your oversight perspective, is to obtain that assurance through the audit committee. Okay, then the next question raised was, in terms of we issue audit reports, action plans to address the internal control deficiencies are not implemented, so what happens there from the AGSA side? Do we report to National Treasury? Do we report to the department? I'm going to answer this question in relation to, there were two questions that were asked, the last two questions, they're actually interlinked. Our responsibility is basically to report to the accounting authority in terms of the outcomes of the audit. The accounting authority has the responsibility to act on the outcomes of the audit. We also report to the department. We have a relationship with the DG as well as the minister, as well as the relevant DDGs at the department, where we share with them the outcomes of the entities. And we also guide them and recommend to them specifically in terms of how some of these key internal control deficiencies can be addressed. You would note that from the minister's commitment, one of the areas that we recommended that needs to be looked at is specifically the performance of the accounting authorities and your councils at the TVET colleges. The process around the assessment of the performance of the accounting authorities and the councils of TVET colleges, there needs to be a process put in place, basically, to address that specific area by the department. Like I mentioned, higher education is responsible for 100 institutions. Their main responsibility is managing and oversight. So in ensuring that in terms of Section 38 of the CSMA, the accounting officer is responsible to ensure that the entities and the TVET colleges have the internal control in place. That's the responsibility of the department. I think one of the constraints that DHET faces as well is, given the size of the department, is their capacity to actually exercise the monitoring and oversight to its fullest ability. If you look at the establishment of the department versus their monitoring and oversight responsibilities, they don't have sufficient capacity. And that's also a challenge on the side of the department. Chair, if I would basically would like to add anything to that.
Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members. Apologies for being late. I was attending another committee. Just to add on what Michelle has said, and just like to refer the honorable members to the purpose of this session, which is to share the audit outcomes and to support the committee in developing a report for the BRRR process to National Treasury. Yes, our responsibility and mandate is to audit and report to Parliament in terms of the audit outcomes of the department. So the intention is that in terms of what we have shared today, the committee will use this information in their BRRR report to National Treasury. We elevate the findings as far as we can, as Michelle has indicated, to all those that are charged with governance. We meet with the portfolio committee regularly, and the responsibility to act specifically what the member asked in relation to blacklisting an entity or a department is not one of the AGSA's mandate. And hence we just share what we have done with the portfolio committee. The recommendations will come from this committee in relation to what needs to be done for the budget process for the ensuing financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for all the responses. I just want to check once more if the honourable members have got other follow-up questions. None. I really don't want to give out the department so that they don't feel like they're being honourable. For the second time, I call you honourable. You need to talk.
Thanks. I suppose it's an AGSA stage. We're here tomorrow. Thank you, sir.
All right. No, it's okay. But thank you for coming and showing interest in our work as related to the AG. Honourable members, it does look like we've come to an end of our engagement with AXA. Let me then hasten to thank the honourable members for the constructive engagement with AXA. We thank the Department of Higher Education and Training just for their presence, and AXA for the presentation, but also for your adequate responses to the questions raised by the honourable members. And I have no doubt in my mind that this has brought clarity on the outcomes of the department and its entities for the financial year 2014-15. And I am convinced that this will enable the members to engage meaningfully with the department tomorrow. And those entities that request to come and appear before the committee. Well, from the presentation, the key thing that came out from the presentation is that there has been an improvement in the department's audit outcomes. This is illustrated by the movement from 5 clean audits in the period 13-14 to 9 clean audits in the period 14-15. Am I correct? Thank you very much. But as you would know, what Dr. Mandela once said, as you climb the hills, when you think you've reached the top, then realize that there are many more hills to be climbed. So I'm trying to say there's still room for improvement. And 9 means you can do more maybe in the next audit outcome report by the AXA. Also, we have made observations that from your 16 unqualified opinions with letters of empathy, you have not made a movement. Of course, what will make us feel that we have made an impact is when, after our engagement with yourself, with the department, we then see a movement, an upward movement. That, to us, will count as an impact. For now, maintenance is not good enough of the status quo. Well, of course, there were areas of improvement that came up from the presentation. On the action plan, it is clear that what will be good is that these action plans are submitted in a month to the AG's office and must be implemented with immediate effect. And a quarterly report must be submitted on the implementation, successful implementation of the action plan. It's simple, just for us to cooperate with one another. In a month's time, we should have an action plan, not only from the department, also from the entities and the TVET colleges in a month, because when there are time frames, talking to the SMART plan, then we should be able to deliver. And we must respect the time frame. Of course, what also came up strong from the presentation is the fact that all funded vacant positions must be filled. Because if they're not filled, we find ourselves confronted with saving, and it is no guarantee if a saving will be rolled, you know, into the next financial year or not. So we do that on this. If the funded vacant positions, let those positions be filled, because we need all those people in order to be able to implement your structure effectively and efficiently. Well, all TVET colleges have got to submit financial information to ACSA timely, and irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure to be avoided at all costs. It's not what we are saying, this is a compliance issue in terms of the TFMA. Of course, there was also a concern on the record management. This is one area of improvement that we observing coming from the presentation, improvement of record management. And also the fact that once there are action plans, there should be close monitoring of their implementation, even at this level, at the TVET college level, close monitoring of the implementation of action plans. Because it will not be good that we sit here, we hear that the action plans have been submitted, and come the following year, but the action plans are actually meant to improve the status quo. Come the following year, we still talk about the same matters of effort, which were supposed to be corrected by the action plan. So we're saying, I think that one came up strong from the members here, who said that action plans, and then come the following year, we still talk about the same action plan. So here we really would like to see improvements. The other area of concern was lack of internal audit units in some TVET colleges. And then the corrective measure here would be establishment of internal audit units and audit committees in all TVET colleges. Well, these are internal controls that are supposed to assist in ensuring that is improvement all the way on the audit outcomes of financial management, so that all the TVET colleges also get the in audit. Well, this one also was shocked when I heard about the movement from 400,000 audit fees to 4 million. The hike. Too much. Scary, actually. 1 year, 4 million. Take into consideration that the PFMA says we've got to use the very limited resources economically. This one, sorry to say, tax that too much. Imagine your budget yesterday at home was 400. Following month, 4 million. Too much. Something is going to be done. I'm sending a message to the Department of Higher Education and Training there, because we were told that you gave instructions. But then, if you can engage in negotiations there, because this is too much. It's true. I mean, if the Cedar College has not budgeted 4 million, if one engagement, then the 4 million is needed. You know, you've got to budget. I think you are hearing us. You were all shocked. 400,000 to 4 million. Too much. And I know this one must have dislodged the college, because if they had not budgeted for this, they really didn't spend money. Well, yeah, we see, you say currently it's 1.7 million. Well, we are hoping that this one will be affordable. Well, the other area of NSF is the need for them to allocate a testing for performance management or performance coordination. Management coordination is the same, yeah? Performance management. Yeah, I think that's one, this one will help. But also to say, as a committee, we would like to propose that in our next engagement, now this one is directed to the Department of Higher Education and Training, in our engagement we would also like to have a external auditor come so that they can tell us. Honestly speaking, they are the ones who are responsible in ensuring that they are, you know, we all get clean audit outcomes. Their work is to do this on a monthly basis and submit to the audit committee, and the audit committee assist us so they don't come here and talk about work that was supposed to have been done by the internal auditor, internal auditors and the audit committee. So in future, we'll be happy to have the internal auditors to come and tell us the story on why have we failed to comply to the PFMA. Well, this brings us to the conclusion of our engagement, and thank you so much. I strongly believe that we've had constructive engagement. We shouldn't be scared to talk about 4 million. It scared us. It gave us a shock. Mm-hmm. We'd like to shock you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the engagement. And then we'll take a 5 minute break to allow you to quietly walk out, because the committee must come back in 5 minutes to proceed with the meeting. Yeah, other members have been there. Thank you very much.